We started off with a review of the menstrual cycle and its relevance to contraception. Now we'll shift to the other end of the spectrum and talk about its relevance to perimenopausal symptoms and menopausal symptoms.
Menopause is 12 months without a period. There are a lot of changes that begin to happen many, many years prior to that. Women are born with the number of eggs that we're ever going to have. And so with each natural menstrual cycle and as time goes on, we lose eggs in the ovary. The ovary is still able to respond to that pituitary gland and make estrogen often when it cannot respond any longer to ovulate. So the first thing that happens is that the number of ovulatory cycles diminishes. And that means that nice cycle of estrogen and progesterone becomes erratic. And there are some cycles that have estrogen only, some that have estrogen with progesterone, and the cycles become irregular. She may bleed too much, not enough, and she may have hormonal symptoms related to these fluctuations in hormones. So in the old days, we used to think of menopausal symptoms as symptoms of estrogen deficiency. We now know that that's not true. That what it really is this fluctuating roller coaster of symptoms that occur over and hormonal levels that occur over many, many years. We call that now the perimenopause, and then menopause is 12 months without a natural cycle. But women can become symptomatic from that roller coaster of hormones many, many years prior to her last menstrual period. There are two ways of handling perimenopausal symptoms. Oral contraceptives will suppress the roller coaster. They will smooth out the ride. The highs and the lows all go away, and we give a very nice, consistent level of hormone throughout time. For women who are either not candidates for oral contraceptives or choose not to use them for some reason, when we talk about hormonal therapy and adding estrogen and progestin, we're adding to what she already has. So the lows will become less low, but the highs will be higher. And sometimes that's helpful, but often we have to be very light on our feet in terms of what we're doing, because what's right today and may work for this month may very well not work next month. So oral contraceptives, by smoothing, suppressing the pituitary, the stimulation of the ovary that's happening in these years. So the ovary is running out of gas. It's a little tired. The pituitary gland is working very hard to whip the ovary into making more estrogen. And we get swings. We get those wild swings. The birth control pills will suppress that. Hormonal therapy, menopausal hormonal therapy, adds to it.
Well, and then there's some mix and match. If we are using progestin-only methods, such particularly the injectable or the levonorgestrel IUS, that can take care of her every now and again when the engine does turn on and she ovulates, and she may still be at risk for pregnancy. We provide the pregnancy protection from that aspect, and then we can layer on a little bit of estrogen and not have to go through the unscheduled spotting and bleeding. And so into the menopause, we can provide pregnancy protection and endometrial protection with those progestin-only methods and control what she's doing with a touch, as you're suggesting, of estrogen.
What's the difference between the hormonal preparation used in contraception and those used for postmenopausal hormone therapy?
Although there are estrogen-only products, progesterone-only products, and combined products which contain both an estrogen and a progesterone, the doses contained in the products used for hormone therapy are substantially lower, approximately 1/10 to 1/20 that of the dosing that we see in combined oral contraceptive products used for the purpose of contraception.
I think people are confused by that, because if you look at the birth control pill, you're looking at perhaps 35 micrograms of ethinyl estradiol, and they turn and they say 0.6 milligrams, you know, but to realize that the potency of the estrogens that we have in the birth control pill are just so much greater, that the effect that you're talking about is so much higher with the birth control pill, and the risks and the side effects, right?
And that makes sense if you think about it. I mean, the purpose of contraceptive steroids is to suppress the system, and it has to be of a sufficient amount to do that, versus just tweaking the system for symptoms. So a totally different purpose in the medications, and formulations are quite different in potency.
What are the benefits of hormone therapy?
definitely symptom relief. So relief of hot flashes, night sweats, vaginal dryness and atrophy, those are key benefits to menopausal or perimenopausal hormonal therapy. There are some benefits as well for younger women on mostly estrogen replacement, in that we now know through the Women's Health Initiative that in the younger population of women who are retained on estrogen, that there's a lower risk of cardiovascular disease. So there are benefits with respect to reducing heart disease risk in the young population of women on hormones. But the key reason to use them is for reduction in symptoms. We also know that osteoporosis is prevented by using estrogen therapy after menopause.
So, Dr. Nelson, talk about some of the risks that are associated in using hormone therapy.
Well, clearly we know that there are some risks that relate to the venous thromboembolism, the estrogen component. Other than that, in healthy young women, the beauty of the reanalysis of the WHI shows us that in women who are recently menopausal, women who are 50 to 59 or within 10 years of their menopause, there was absolutely no increase in cardiovascular disease, there was no increase in stroke, there was no increase in any of the outcomes, even breast cancer. We didn't see for 5 years of postmenopausal use, there was absolutely no increase in the risk of invasive breast cancer in the estrogen plus progestin arm. And in the women who only got the estrogen, tremendously different picture, even in the women who started it later in life. So a lot of the lessons that we all learned in the immediate wake of WHI really weren't relevant to women coming into the menopause today. And that's the most important lesson that people need to have, because the good news didn't spread as fast as the bad news did. And I think it was important that, as I said, the good news doesn't work really well, that in the estrogen alone arm, we didn't see any increase in cardiovascular disease. But I bet you if you went out and asked people today, what do postmenopausal hormone therapy do? Oh, it increases heart risk. Well, in women all the way up to the 70s, giving estrogen alone made no difference in coronary heart disease. It made no difference. 7.8 years worth of use made absolutely no difference in invasive breast cancer. But I'll bet you people would say the WHI showed an increase in
breast
cancer.
Well, in fact, it reduced breast cancer. Mm-hmm. It was not statistically significant, but the relative amount of reduction in breast cancer in the estrogen-only arm of that study was actually pretty dramatic.
Well, actually, two of the subtypes, the most common types, the ductal carcinoma and regional localized disease, the things that we see every day in the practice, those achieve statistical significance, a 30% reduction in those in the estrogen-alone arm. So I think there's been a lot of misinformation that's out there that is troubling women in making these choices. One of the surveys we see is that if you go and ask women in the wake of the U.S. Preventive Health Services, that folks were asked in the 40s, the woman who's age 40 today, what's her chance of developing breast cancer in the next 10 years? And the estimates were somewhere between 20 and 40%. And the answer is less than 1%. And if you ask people what they think they're going to die of, 40% of women will tell you they think the number one killer is breast cancer. Okay, and that heart disease is minor. And on the other hand, when we're suggesting hormonal therapies, if they have a very big concern around breast cancer, they may be very reluctant to try something that could provide them tremendous relief without increasing that risk.
Which actually leads me to the next question, which is really about the biggest misconceptions among healthcare professionals regarding hormone therapy. What would you say they are?
Well, I think one of the biggest still is the fact that hormones are not safe, specifically that supposed increased cardiovascular risk across the board in all women included in that initial WHI trial, starting at age 50 all the way up through 79. And again, the reanalysis suggests that those patients in that 50 to 59 category, no increase in risk with combined hormonal therapy. Specifically, what we're seeing is that we still have many providers who are automatically discontinuing combined hormonal therapy in many patients who could still benefit for a number of years from symptom relief simply because there's a new diagnosis of a coronary heart disease related event or a new diagnosis or potential risk for coronary heart disease.
Much
and those physicians are actually concerned.
Can you discuss some of the other challenges surrounding hormone therapy? I would imagine some people come in not really knowing. A woman in her 40s, she's not sure what her symptoms are about. She may not have seen a physician, and she shows up at your pharmacy.
Absolutely. And we get questions related to, I'm having this symptom or that symptom. Could it be menopause? I'm kind of approaching that age. And certainly those questions need to be addressed and proper guidance should be given. I think the other thing that many women are not aware of, again, going back to the risks, is they're almost afraid to go that direction, even though they're approaching approaching that age and beginning to experience symptoms, they're hesitant to ask about the option of seeking hormone therapy because of what they've heard about the possible risks. In addition, they're not aware of many of the options available. Again, they may think there's only one particular option, and it's our job to educate them that there are multiple options available to help minimize their symptoms and, again, that they are absolutely safe in many patients for many years, very early on in the course of that transition, as well as in the course of actual menopause.
Yeah. Well, for our second patient study, we had the opportunity to meet with Beverly, a colleague of Dr. Nelson. Now, Beverly is 58 years old, and like many women, she started to have some symptoms which she wasn't sure were related to menopause. So let's see how she managed her symptoms.
I've always been very interested in being healthy. I have lots of friends that have bikes, and we do the bike path. There's lots of places to bike safely. I've always enjoyed exercise and being outside, and biking is a good way to do both things at the same time.
On the scale, and we'll see how much you weigh.
I was a nurse practitioner in the OBGYN department at Harbor UCLA for 33 years. Recently retired. Tell us if there's any problems with headaches, sleep disturbances. Working in women's healthcare all my life. My first symptoms, you would have thought that I would have been right on top of. Sleeplessness, lack of energy, mood swings. But the first couple of times I had a hot flash, I kind of remember thinking, I don't remember getting sunburned. Then I went, I'm not sunburned, I'm having a hot flash. And so I discussed with Dr. Nelson what the latest information is, what the statistics are, what all the different medication types are.
That's really a very important question. Beverly and I have been working together since 1981. We pick each other's brains, and when she went on to hormone therapy, she was a little bit apprehensive and asked me some questions.
And I was wondering if there had been anything new, studies that had come out.
If women have decided to use hormonal therapy, we have the traditional products, but we also have transdermals, we have creams. So for women in different situations, we can match the woman to the therapy. And the big question is, how long is this going to go on? That's one question I cannot answer, because some women actually have hot flashes until their 80s or 90s. Beverly settled on what she liked, a very common hormone therapy with estrogen and progestin. One thing that hormonal therapy does better than any of the other therapies is that if a woman has a hot flash when she's on hormonal menopausal therapy, the severity of those hot flashes is significantly reduced. We do need to let women be reassured of the safety and the efficacy of this medication, but there are some women who really ought not to be taking it or need to realize that they have higher risks when they take it. And particularly the older women, this is a fairly empiric process. I can tell her what the risks might be, and we can balance and see if the risks are outweighed by the benefits or not and continue.
For me, the low-dose hormone replacement was the best. When I first started taking hormone replacement, I started having bouts of bleeding, which finally got straightened out when I went to the lower dose, and no more symptoms of hot flashes.
It's not for the rest of her life. Every year we reassess and make sure that this is still right for her.
I knew, because of my family history of osteoporosis, that taking hormone replacement would be good for me. I guess I got that from my mom. Menopause and retirement have been great for me. I don't have sleep disturbances. I don't have mood swings. I haven't had a hot flash since I started taking the hormone replacement. So, yay! I have been taking hormone replacement for 8 years and plan to take it for at least 2 more. And if I stop and the symptoms come back, I'll go right back on it. I get to sleep in the morning. That's my favorite thing about being retired so far.
Beverly so emphasizes all the things that are important to women, the what is that sensation that I'm having? It is really a hot flash, not a sunburn. That's a California thing that somebody would think was a sunburn. But just understanding what's happening to her body. Of course, with her background, she understood a lot better the physiology of what's going on. But there still is a little bit of confusion as what's happening to me. And I think that this is a rough road for some women. Some women walk right up to their last period. 15% of women, you know, absolutely no symptoms at all. That's done with. They look at the rest of us and go, ha, inferior. Okay. But to understand today what's causing the hot flashes, understanding the pathophysiology, understanding why some women are sensitive and some aren't, why some might respond to certain medications and others not. So we have such an array of different experiences as women traverse these changes over time that we need to be flexible in what we're offering them. They come to us with different medical problems so that they may be candidates for one sort of therapy over another. But I think the big thing today is that we're treating symptoms and changes in hormones and what estrogen deficiency might be doing to their vaginas and to their bones, and to put this whole package together for each individual woman as she's going through the transition, and then long term maybe moving her to other therapies to target those types of particular issues for her.
We also know that women receive health information from more than just their physician, other healthcare professionals. What specifically is the role of the pharmacist in regards to women's health issues?
Well, I think the pharmacist certainly plays a key role in educating the patient overall about hormone therapy options and about contraceptive options as well. Not only educating the patient about what the different options are that are available, but also what are some of the risks, what are some of the side effects, what do you need to watch out for in terms of early warning signs in terms of risk, and when do they need to be redirected back to their primary care provider or the prescribing physician for follow-up related to early symptoms or early warning signals associated with some of the risks. The pharmacists specifically are among the most frequently encountered healthcare professionals. Being in a position in which many patients seek over-the-counter remedies for various illnesses or for various reasons and indications, in addition to that, we have many, many patients, including these women, who seek hormonal therapy for the treatment of their symptoms, who seek monthly contraceptive hormonal pills for the prevention of pregnancy. That typically involves a trip to the pharmacy and an encounter with the pharmacist. And so the pharmacist is in a unique position to frequently encounter these patients and address any questions and really mitigate any potential concerns that they have either about contraceptives or hormone replacement therapy.
For our last segment, we reached out to pharmacists to discuss their role in addressing issues of contraception and menopause.
Patients often come into the pharmacy almost on a weekly basis, so we develop very close relationships with them.
Hi. Hi, Jenny. How are you?
Good. We can interact with them, see how their medications are working for them.
I just had a few questions.
And serve as a communicator between the patient and the physician if necessary.
It's probably a good conversation to have with your physician.
So in relation to women's health, questions about menopause and contraception are often some of the top questions we do get.
Have you ever taken birth control pills before?
Not before.
The most common questions that we get about contraception include: if I miss a pill related to my birth control, what do I need to do next? What side effects can occur from oral contraceptives, and how can they manage them?
Is there anything I could do to prevent that? Or
I think that a lot of patients will turn to their pharmacist because it is a lot more convenient. They don't have to make an appointment, and oftentimes they don't even have to come to the pharmacy. They can just call. Sometimes the patient will think about questions they might have about their medications after they leave their physician's office. A lot of times, some patients might get a brand new dosage form and they don't quite understand how to use it, so we can bridge that gap for them.
Pharmacists are in a unique role to see the big picture as it relates to medications. So the pharmacist will review the patient's medications, look for problems, report those back to the physician. Many physicians are depending on pharmacists to be the healthcare provider that's providing more in-depth education for the patient to supplement the information that they're getting in the physician's office as well. It's extremely important for pharmacists to be prepared for questions about hormone therapy. It's important that those medications are used appropriately, that all the risks and benefits have been weighed, and that the therapies that are being prescribed are based on the latest evidence.
Hi. How may I help you?
you considering female hormone replacement?
One of the main differences between pharmacists and physicians would be that pharmacists don't prescribe or diagnose. However, we do make recommendations for patients. I may be able to recommend a couple of medications that they can discuss with their doctor that may be appropriate for them. Women will come to the pharmacy with questions about symptoms of menopause. Oftentimes they're asking us to see, might this be menopause, because I'm kind of getting to that age.
So things like breast tenderness, fluid.
They may also want to know about over-the-counter therapies that they've heard of that may help with the symptoms of menopause, as well as the risks and benefits of taking hormone therapy. And there's a lot of information out there.
Hi,
and so some women don't know what to think, and so they may come to the pharmacy with questions, you know, looking for a little direction.
Get some clarification and maybe...
When we talk to women about the risks associated with hormone therapy and the safety of these medications, we emphasize that they're continuing to talk with their doctor and to take the medication for the shortest time possible to take care of their symptoms.
Definitely something you should ask about.
It can be challenging to keep track of things that are changing with regard to hormone products that are available on the market, but it's our responsibility to do so and to make sure that we have a good understanding of what's available so that we can properly counsel and direct our patients and to answer their questions and to refer them to their physician when needed.
Great, thank you. All right, bye.
I think it's important to underscore the need for pharmacists to play that key role in counseling and educating patients who have questions related to hormonal therapies and contraceptive therapies, in addition to educating the patient directly and communicating well with the patient so that they understand the risks and the benefits of these treatments. It's also extremely important for pharmacists to communicate with the other healthcare providers who are involved in the care of the patient, to have that communication back to the prescribing physician when adverse effects potentially are identified or when questions arise regarding the indication for a particular hormonal therapy, rather than just making assumptions. We're all in this together, and at the center of that is the patient, and we collaborate in order to achieve, I think, the best possible outcomes for our patients.
We have covered a great deal of material today, all of it extremely important, but if you could whittle it down to just a few key take-home points for your colleagues, what would you say?
Number one, I think understanding the physiology of the menstrual cycle and how that changes over a woman's lifespan helps us understand how to intervene and what to do. And secondly, that we balance risks and benefits, and always remembering that a risk of pregnancy is going to be higher than the risk of almost any contraceptive hormone intervention that we do.
I think it's important for not only patients, but also healthcare providers to be aware of the variety of different options available, both for contraception as well as for hormone therapy in the setting of menopause. In addition, we need to fully understand what are the risks, but also what are the many benefits, and make sure that gets translated back to the patient so that they understand the importance of adhering to therapy and the important benefits that oftentimes will outweigh many of the risks for many patients. Taking a highly individualized approach, monitoring patients very carefully, you're less likely to get into trouble, and patients are likely to benefit from these therapies.
The importance of contraception to women's health is always underestimated, and if we can put it into the context of how important prevention of pregnancy is and all the non-contraceptive benefits that women get, I think can help motivate women. But we need to look at the barriers that they have to getting access to any of the medications.
Thank you all for participating in this really important discussion today. We'd also like to thank our viewers, and we hope today's program has helped you to better understand the hormone therapy options for contraception and menopausal symptoms. We encourage each of you to go to your computer, log on to DiscoveryChannelCME.com, and take the post test. It only takes a few minutes to earn free credit for this program. If you'd like to see the program again, you can watch it online, download a podcast, or order a DVD. All the graphics and references from the program are also available online. Finally, we'd like to thank the University of Virginia School of Medicine for accrediting the program, and we'd like to thank Bayer Healthcare Pharmaceuticals for the educational grant that made this program possible. I'm Rhea Blakey for Discovery Channel CME. Have a great day.